blew up very quickly, but yes, on April 9th will be where we officially vote on the superintendent's budget. And there'll still, you know, like, there'll be opportunities for us to kind of question and comment. This is the time.
Okay, for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet, WFPR.FM, and in the local Franklin, Mass. FM radio dial 102.9. Here in studio again today, this is another chalkboard chat. Yes, there was a school committee meeting last week, so we're getting into the rhythm of recapping what happened at the school committee meeting. School committee chair Dave Callahan. Dave, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks again for having me, because, yeah, we love to try to do these quick little recaps. I think last meeting was, we hit the 3-hour marker, if not a little bit more. So today we'll try to give that little recap within 30 minutes, just a little commute to work.
Absolutely. Yeah. And clearly you had a bunch, it was primarily really around one single point of the discussion. It's a topic that we've talked about before, but you just clearly went into a whole lot more detail.
Yeah, quite, about like $80 million worth of detail into the budget, where we had our the open hearing. Mm-hmm. For the FY25 budget.
Right. And for the listeners, fiscal year 25, we're in fiscal year 24. It ends in June, and then the fiscal year 25 starts July 1, which is why it's FY25. 25 is always the year ending the fiscal year. After next year, it'll be FY26 and so forth. But yeah, you're in your budget cycle. To replay for the listeners as well, the superintendent gave his recommended budget, and you kind of previewed that. This was really, then you got the formal budget presentation, and then this was the formal budget hearing. People did have an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Some people chose not to exercise it, but there was an opportunity to ask some individual questions as opposed to just having you as school committee members question central office.
Exactly, yeah. Whereas in, you know, we'll always have the opportunity for, like, citizens' comments at, mm-hmm. at, you know, the big meetings. But with this one, though, with the open hearing, it has the opportunity for citizens themselves to, you know, either if they're in or to, you know, hop on Zoom and to ask questions as it relates to the budget.
To the budget
with answers, you know, directed, you know, and received from the superintendent. Mm-hmm. You know, Dr. Dutch was there as well. I mean, the whole staff. And so, but it also, you know, it still gives the school committee members that opportunity as well.
Where, right.
You know, we kind of place holds on certain ones that maybe we're a little bit confused on, or we just mm-hmm. want a bit more clarity.
Well, and you had an opportunity twice, because you went through the presentation, had some clarification questions on the presentation, and then specifically went through line by line. And that's where, at least as my watching, there were some things that said in the presentation, well, they didn't necessarily jive when the line by line. Okay, was this what you talked about when or moved here as opposed to move there, et cetera? So all good questions, all good clarifications in order to get to where is the money being spent? How is it being spent? How are we getting the big bang that we're supposed to from the dollars?
Exactly, yeah, because this is the transparency. It's literally opening up the books to say, you know, Here's the exact line, and those line items, too. I mean, that's what's reported to mm-hmm. the state as well. So it's nothing that we kind of necessarily make up ourselves.
Right.
And yeah, this is where we open up the books to really kind of look at it and to dive deep to say, okay, I know you say that you're, you know, spending this much, say, over at Kennedy, but exactly kind of how is that broken down? And here's mm-hmm. that line item by line item that says explicitly this much, you know, money is being allocated, you know, for teacher salaries or for whatever exactly that
right
the line item says.
Yeah, and I think Dr. Dutch had two points that caught me in terms of making sure some of the folks catch, because there's some nuance in there, and clearly his interpretation of some pieces said, well, it had been in this line item, but it really makes more sense to be in this line item, which, okay, that's an interpretation piece. He's the guy now doing it. And thereby, there some changes, you know, year to year, it looks like some things went up, some things went down because of those changes, right? And that's fair, but you need to know, oh, yeah, that was that dude you're talking about.
Exactly. And I think if you take a look at the budget book, they put little asterisks on those that really kind of, because there were some that went up like 900%.
Sure.
But like his rationale, which I truly appreciate and something I want to kind of continue moving forward, is if you want to know exactly how much it costs to run the football team,
right,
you should just have this one line that says football team athletics, this mm-hmm. much money, as opposed to kind of having to piecemeal it all together and to say, well, the coaches, you know, this dollar figure is kind of split between the, you know, the hockey coaches and the football coaches, just really kind of include some of those line items for to synthesize that. Mm-hmm. So in the budget book, it gets into that in a bit more granular detail where it does have those asterisks to say, this is why it jumped up 900%. But when we did those line items, a lot of those holes were like, yeah, hey, wait a minute, why did this go up so much?
Right.
And it wasn't that we're just investing that much more into this one particular
right.
category. It's just how the money is kind of being.
Yeah, there's generally a significant drop on another line item in the other section of the budget. So they offset each other.
Exactly.
Know. The bottom line didn't necessarily change. It was just moving from one to the other. The other piece that was interesting, too, because I had tried in some other prior year's budgets, and then I kind of gave up. Now I understand why I gave up. The accounting for a number of the grants was not necessarily included in some of the line items on the budget. It was just the town funding, because that clearly was what was going forward, so you needed to justify that. Those numbers need to tie. And at the end of the year, when Dr. Dutch explained that, yeah, the town funds, the school funds all come out, and then that gets filed to the state, and that's where the per pupil expense, which everybody is looking at and saying, well, how come we're behind, et cetera, that gets married up. So it's all together there, but it wasn't necessarily reflected in the budget in prior years that way. This year, from what I understand, and he now has the grant funding in on those line items accordingly.
Yeah, I think that this budget really kind of tries to paint that true picture of how much does it cost
mm-hmm.
to educate, you know, the kids in Franklin today right. by really taking a look at all those different costs and, you know, in terms of like the money from the revolving account and all how that's kind of pieced together.
Right. Yeah, and the revolving account I know has been the source of a number of conversations, but effectively they're akin to, on the town side, they've got the enterprise funds. So water, sewer, trash, now stormwater, user-based fees go in there, and then from those accounts, the town pays for the sewer costs, for the water costs, for the stormwater. So you've got a similar piece where it's generally student fees for lunch, buses, activities, sports. And your policy effectively said, we're going to keep a year's worth, whatever that year's worth is, in the budget or in the fund accounting, and then give you something, quote, as a cushion. So it's not something coming in September, going out in October, which had caused, by the way, back in 2007, 2008, an accounting issue that... You know, it is somewhat forgotten. I did not forget it because it was when I'm just starting reporting. All of a sudden, this is going on. What the heck's going on? But you came around in terms of better accounting processes, creating the revolving funds, and overtly, the audit has also shown they've been clean audits. So things are much better now and going forward, but it's still... Some people don't quite understand that concept.
Yeah, because, and especially in the way that they're designed, too, that for, you know, say, like the athletics, anything that's in that revolving account is exclusively, can only be spent on athletics.
Correct.
And so I know last year we utilized as much as we could from that revolving account within athletics. For athletics.
Right.
Just to kind of be able to make it so that, because, like, the athletics... All the fees that you know individual are paying for, like athletics and like buses,
mm-hmm.
only covers about a third of the total overall cost.
Well, and the one other thing subsidized. That was a soundbite that certainly caught me, it's like $150,000 for ice time for both the hockey teams. That's a significant amount of money.
Right.
And clearly they're not, the student fees, as high as they are, they're not covering that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's not a one-to-one match. And that was something, too, that we worked on with this budget book, that a lot of those fees, the ECDC tuition, athletic fees, the bus transportation, all those user fees, really kind of broke down that percentage to say,
right.
You know, it's like, all right, you look at the bus and you say it's expensive when it's $360 a kid to send them to school for the year. But then you see that that's just a third of the cost. The actual cost is about, like, you know, almost $1,100 per child. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, where each family is being subsidized, right, two-thirds of that, just to kind of keep, because, I mean, it's costs can get out of control very quickly.
They can, and I'm still doing what I'm doing because, back in 2001, 2002, 2003, some of those fees were introduced, and they've been creeping up over the years. And that's revenue that the town is using, but to a certain extent, in terms of our wealth status from the state's numbers, so it's not just some pie in the sky saying we're wealthy, we can afford more. The state has the same set of numbers for all 350 communities, and they're saying we could, and that's part of the reason we've got all those other fees going up, because we haven't been paying for it out of the regular budget stuff.
You know, one other thing too, when you kind of talk about, like, grants, that I thought was came up either during this one or this.
There's been a few opportunities.
I've been in a couple of different budget presentations and in meetings past couple of months. But when they talked about grants, one of the, I was such a huge proponent when I was first, you know, kind of running for school committee and really trying to do everything I could. And Lucas and his whole team has done a wonderful job of securing as many grants as they can.
Right.
But one of the reoccurring messages that they keep getting when they reach out for more is kind of like a double whammy. Where, one, when you talk about that wealth status, they're being denied grants because they look at Franklin and they say that you're not necessarily a community that, sure, that needs the support. Right. There's a lot of other communities that mm-hmm. do need the support. But then on top of that, they also look at us and say, we don't want to give you this seed money because we look at your finances and you're not necessarily a district that's going to be able to continue to invest once we're done. Because that's right. what these grants are looking to say, all right, you mm-hmm. know what, we have this great program, you go, you submit the grant, maybe we get $50,000 to expand this program that we have, but that they know that once that 50 grand has expired that they gave to us, Franklin doesn't necessarily have the money to continue it, so they don't even want to bother giving us the money because they know it's going to die on the vine.
Right.
And it's been an unfortunate reality that mm-hmm. we've kind of been facing based on how the finances have been mm-hmm. for a number of years.
Yeah, and that was reflected in some of the other budget discussions in regard to certainly, I think it's approximately a 20% turnover of the teaching staff. That has a dollar impact because it's, to a certain extent, hidden dollars to the extent that it's that hiring time, the hiring process. You've got now an X amount of people on a search committee reviewing resumes, doing interviews, you know, doing whatever it takes to do that full process, and clearly from a regular teacher through to a principal, there are slight differences in that. It's going to take more to bring in a principal if you're going to have more community involvement, et cetera. That's still time, and it takes time out of people's regular day. So there's not necessarily just, oh, there's just extra money because we're now hiring somebody. No, it means Lucas and other members of the staff, wherever they are, they're not doing the educational support because they're now doing this.
And, you know, we also had, this was just maybe like a year and a half ago, but when there was, Lucas keeps, you know, would talk about how it's like 117
right.
Vacancies over the summer that they had right. to fill, that the positions that don't get filled, obviously, like, kids are still showing up to the classrooms, and what they were ending up having to do was to hire out effectively temp agencies mm-hmm. to agencies that would bring in, like, long-term subs that cost significantly more
right.
than what the average teacher salary was going to be.
Yep.
And yeah, because of, you know, there's been a declining trend, unfortunately, of that teacher retention rate where, yeah, it was about like 90% pre-COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And just in the past couple of years, we see it tick down further and further and further till we only have about like 84% retention rate
mm-hmm.
for our teachers. And so, yeah, there's a substantial cost when we're not able to kind of hold on to our teacher.
Right.
You know, and because you also take a look at it and you say, we go and we spend the money, we spend the resources, we finally have a teacher. We're spending a couple of years to train that teacher up and get them mm-hmm. integrated in the whole Franklin system. And with that 84%, you know, what you see is, you know, those 16% of teachers say, thank you very much for the experience and the training. Now I want to go off to a district that is a bit more stable mm-hmm. or maybe pays a bit,
paying
better.
A bit more.
And you can't blame the teachers. That's no. what anybody else, you know, in the private sector would be doing the same. Absolutely. But it costs us significantly, the taxpayers, when that happens.
Right. So you went through the budget, line item by line item, had a few clarification questions generally, and now you come up with a budget vote next meeting.
Correct. Official meeting.
Next official meeting. You've got a special meeting. By the time this comes out, the special meeting will have occurred. April 9th, I think, is your next full meeting.
Blew up very quickly, but yeah, so on April 9th will be where we officially vote on the superintendent's budget. And there'll still, you know, like, there'll be opportunities for us to kind of question and comment. This is the time last year where there was an amendment to the vote to actually increase the superintendent's budget, and I personally won't be bringing up that amendment myself. I'm happy with this number that the superintendent Jagir had kind of put forward, and we'll be voting on the budget, because what we need to do is then kind of take that and slide it into the as Jamie, as the town administrator, is going to work on his overall budget,
right,
to kind of be able to, you know, put that into context to say this is what the school committee is recommending from the superintendent's recommendation.
Yeah.
So that way on April 12th he can kind of release his overall budget recommendation that includes every single department, schools included.
Yeah, the total town budget, of which school certainly is a key piece, but it's just one line item from the town perspective. And then the rest of the budget cycle continues in earnest. There's likely going to be sometime in April another joint budget subcommittee meeting, or maybe a joint budget meeting. I know Chair Mercer has teased that he may be bringing the full school committee, full town council, full FinCom together. That'd be nice to see it happens. I know there's a whole lot of details to that. So,
but yeah, no, that was something where, because at the last end of the joint budget, where he was kind of talking and just saying, you know, just for open meeting law purposes,
sure,
that we can't have, you know, too many members from either board interject or ask questions or comments. And so if there is like a joint between town council and school committee, it allows all, what do we got, 15?
All participants. All,
yeah, exactly. Everybody to kind of hop on board.
9 and 7, 16.
There we go.
Yeah. Assuming no absences. Yeah.
To all ask questions, comments, and really kind of just continue to engage in this conversation, because it's a big one. You know, I mean, we got from the joint budget, the town overall had that $10.1 million shortfall, projected shortfall.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of hard choices and decisions that we're going to have to be able to navigate moving forward, all of us together.
Absolutely.
Too.
Yeah. And then FinCom will go through, Finance Committee will go through their 3-night set of hearings. I believe it's May 6th, 8th, and 15th. Then a week or so later, the town council does their 2-night set of hearings. Sometime before that, if there is going to be an override in June, then again, that's one of the questions. Should there be one, and then what time should it be? So if the decision was going to be in June, the decision needs to be made some 35 days prior to allow notification for the election laws, notifications, etc. So sometime late April, early May, they would have to make that decision if we're going to do it in June. My perspective would be I'd rather do it then, because I fear if somebody does decide, and it may still be a decision, to do it in like in November, which makes sense. You're going to have a major election. Theoretically, 80% of the people are going to show up because it's a presidential year. They're not going to avoid it. But in the meantime, the schools would have gone through however much budget cuts, and then would continue. So making the assumption that somebody does pass it, then the school department is going to now have to go out and hire in the middle of the year some people to come in order to make up the pandemonium that would happen. And that would just, I don't want to go that way.
I really kind of share those same sentiments, because it's going to be difficult as is to kind of try to be able to land this plane. But I think that, if there isn't anything happening until, say, November, you have to start schools in September, you know, and so you're going to have to start it predicated on what you know,
right,
not what we might have.
Correct.
And I think the other aspect, too, is I know my colleague, Paul Griffith had talked about in terms of like unemployment benefits.
Yes.
That there's also that just needs to be considered. And not to say it's a deciding factor one way or the other, but at the same time, you know, if, you know, the town would have to, if that is the course that, that it goes and nothing happens until November, that, you know, there will be significant cuts. And thus, that the town would have to pay those unemployment benefits, and that's a cost. That's a real dollar cost.
And it's hard to speculate. So even if we did pull a number on it, I don't even want to go there to say any number. But whatever number of people were cut, then theoretically, over the summertime and into the early part of the school year, some number of those will again get rehired, as we talked earlier elsewhere, right? So it's a short term piece from a town perspective, hopefully, because they will get rehired. Some may take a little longer, but there's still going to be a bunch of money there that potentially we could have avoided. Obviously, we got to pay one way or the other. Question is, where do we want to go?
Exactly. And so that's where, you know, Chairman Mercer really laid it out at the joint budget to say, you know, the steps that what he's thinking would be, you know, the schools on April 9th, we're going to know this is the budget that we're putting forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then just a few days later on April 12th is when we'll officially know what, you know, the town administrator's recommended allocation is going to be.
Right. Yep.
There's going to be a difference between those two numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And rightfully, because, you know, the schools are looking for, you know, a 12.9% increase just to kind of to stabilize and reclaim some of what was lost last year. The only way that happens entirely is significant cuts to so many other great programs and departments that are out there. But we're still going to look to wait to see what that number is, and then it kind of falls back on us. And where Chairman Mercer had stated, you know, he'll ask that I draft up a letter and bring that to town council to kind of say, you know, if this is a path that we're going on, this much, and you know, the how much and when. That then the town council will take up and have their discussion on it. Because at the end of the day, the decision is going to rest with those
and
nine.
Your request would be from a school's perspective, this is what we need. And then clearly they can accept, raise it, lower it, but then add something from the town perspective.
So, exactly. Yeah, this will just kind of be from the school stating, you know, we were looking at this 12.9% increase, and, you know, here are the cuts that would have to happen if we, you know, receive whatever that percentage might fall that we discover on April 12th. And then, yeah, they can kind of go and manipulate and discuss however they seem fit.
Yeah. So for those listening, hopefully you've fastened your seatbelts. You're still sitting comfortably, hopefully. Yes, it's hard topics, but be aware. Things are happening. Stay involved. Follow the website. Follow Franklin News. Listen to this and spread the word, because it's going to be a significant discussion with some significant decisions to be made.
Yeah, no, certainly. I mean, I came on in the midst of COVID and all everything that was happening then to school committee. And it's these decisions still that I feel like are some of the most difficult and are going to require some of the most really just kind of hardest choices kind of moving forward than anything I've been a part of thus far.
Yeah, and many hands make like work. Many heads can resolve something and come to a better consensus around which way to go, which is going to be for the town's benefit at some point. So, yeah. And then while we teased, because the other meeting, which still will have some budget impact, but not immediate budget impact. The comprehensive facility analysis is still underway, and there's an update which will have come out by the time this comes out. But then you're still on timeline for that reveal, whatever it's going to be, before the end of the school year.
Exactly. And so, you know, yeah, and this one, just that recap, we're really kind of taking a look at the demographics, like the school population trends, at all of our facilities that we currently have, and just kind of figuring out what's the best way to utilize all that information and to kind of teach kids in 2024 and really for the next 10 years. That we're looking at. And so, yeah, what we wanted to do was, we've had a lot of meetings within the subcommittee, and we had a lot of great workshops the past couple of weeks, but to kind of zoom out a little bit and bring a lot of this information to the school committee, just just for everybody then to ask questions, to kind of kick the tires. Mm-hmm. And I feel, too, it also it puts it in a bigger spotlight as well, just for the general public.
Well, and it's hard because there's, and I've used the analogy, there's an African proverb that if you want to go somewhere, you go alone and you can go quickly. But if you want to get somewhere and really be sustainable, you've got to take people with you. And in order to take people with you, they have to buy into that process. So you could have waited till, call it May, and then revealed all that you've done. I think it makes a whole lot of sense. And here's where we are. Here's what we've done. This is what we've accumulated thus far. And share that part. So at least we know, okay, what's the re-picture of what's going on? And
exactly. Yeah, I mean, this is because the 2020 Castle Booze assessment really kind of it laid out a whole bunch of different scenarios.
Right.
But so many of them required this long-term visioning, this master planning. And
sure.
This is really what we're trying to do. And to that exact extent, we want to make sure that the whole committee is on board throughout that whole entire conversation, because their voice matters just as much as mine. Just because I got a microphone in front of me, it doesn't matter.
Right.
We want to be able to hear what the whole community has to say about some of these issues. And so I think kind of by putting it up on that spotlight in terms of like a full school committee meeting, hopefully, it's that wider audience. And then there's also going to be a number of public forums that will be announced as well, where, again, we'll be looking for even more community engagement.
Yep, and feedback. And
exactly.
Input. Yep, question and answers, because, again, to replay that, two heads are better than one, and having that many more viewpoints, people can catch, did you think about this? Well, and if you have, great. If you haven't, well, that's something you need to be prepared for. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's what, my former colleague Camille Bernstein and I, we did a couple of little listening tours. We called it at the library when there was conversations about possible redistricting, and it was two Saturdays, packed house, a lot of great conversations that I really helped guide kind of my decision making. Mm-hmm. But also I've carried a lot of that stuff with me, where a lot of the questions that were brought up about did you think about this when you were doing it? I'm not really sure, but I want to make sure that we do now as we kind of look at this long-term visioning for Franklin students.
Yeah. Yep. So aside from the budget, that's another big piece, and that's coming a little bit later this year, so stay tuned to that one as well. But focus on the budget first. That's more important
that's
part.
That's the big monster right now that we're looking at. But, I really, and if you have the opportunity, if you haven't already, to watch that meeting as well. Again, I know it ran long, but there was a lot of great information that went out there. I know some of the stuff that, Superintendent Jagir, one of the questions that kind of kept popping up a lot was about the ESSER funding.
Yes.
And because, this is something we've been talking about for quite some time, that in FY25 there will be no ESSER funding.
Right.
And, but I thought it was a great explanation. Kind of in terms of, because a lot of individuals are kind of questioning, well, why do we use the funding that we know is going to expire on say, positions we're looking to continue? And to be clear, there was a lot, there are a number of positions and initiatives that were started under the ESSER funding that didn't continue.
Correct.
And that has kind of stopped because they were utilized, and then there was this one, it was like the Bright program.
Right.
Where it was for individuals who were coming out of a hospitalization stay and reintegrating back into the schools.
Correct.
And during time of COVID, that
made sense made plenty in those times.
Exactly. And now, thankfully, kind of where we are now, it's financially, it didn't make sense to kind of continue that program. So that one was, we were utilizing the federal funding, and because that ESSER funding, that's a federal funding that came from COVID.
Right.
That we utilized it, when it was no longer needed, we stopped.
Mm-hmm.
There was other ones that the interventionists, the individuals who really kind of helped, had this the elevator analogy they often use about helping rise, students up who are, really got expanded during the time of COVID. And they had some there, but they really kind of got expanded. And they're just an incredible return on investment. And so it's some of those ones where it's, it's about $500,000 of positions that are trying to be reincorporated now into the operating budget, but it's because there's great value that we discovered during those times of COVID that we really want to expand and continue on. And so, but there was a lot of great little questions and answers opportunity, you know, time there as well. That I thought that they did a fantastic job with that presentation.
Yeah, we'll include in the show notes the link to the video link. It's available. The YouTube video is available. The audio is available. So however you which you way you want, and the link to the school page where the budget and the budget book, which is rather massive, you can at least get the PDF version and save some paper. And scroll through to your heart's content to figure out and see where the, by school, it breaks it out. So.
Yeah, exactly. And there's hyperlinks where you could just drill into your particular school or whatever the case might be. Mm-hmm. So you could just kind of jump right into those.
Yep. Yeah. And then another piece, at least, and certainly on a positive note, but I think it was also clear in that meeting and better done in terms of the in-house programs for special ed. We've talked before there was something like 40%, 50% savings where at least for some number of programs, it wasn't all of them, but at least some number of programs, they showed actually the in-house costs versus the, quote, out-of-district costs. And that's a healthy number.
Oh, yeah, there was, you know, there's savings of over $3 million that by having these programs in-house. And so, and again, I got to give Miriam Goodman so much credit. I asked her on a whim about how much money we saved. She's like, approximately 50 grand. Maybe she was off by a couple hundred bucks. Like,
not a whole lot.
And but yeah, so when they actually kind of quantified just the programs that they kind of had right then and there, because like I said, there's a few other ones, right. But it's over $3 million in savings by having some of these programs in-house.
Yeah, and that relates as well, because that was one of the key pieces that was left out of that facility analysis before. They really didn't scope for the special programs and the potential growth. Because if we can continue to grow those programs, it behooves us to do so to the extent that we can save that 50% per student. You know, that is good money we can spend. But do we need to spend it? Do we have the right space for it? And that's all part of that other analysis. So, yeah, it still ties back to the budget. It just won't be in the immediate budget line.
But, I'm excited to see what this presentation will be. I know, once this recording goes out, it will have already happened. But just kind of following the work that they've already done, between Dr. Fran Locker and Kate Jessup with KBA, there's a lot of great stuff that they've been presenting, and I'm really excited about where that's going to lead to in terms of, money's, we're looking at money as well. It's, it's the almighty buck. And I think that some of their recommendations, we are looking at in terms of how can we, make the schools run more efficiently in a taxpayer mindset as well.
Sure. Better utilization of the space and better utilization of the space from the student's perspective.
Exactly.
Right. Well, thank you for taking some time. I know your days must be busy with all the budget and all the other stuff that are going on. So on behalf of the listeners, thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for this opportunity. Like I said, if the fact that we're able to take that 3.5 hour meeting and shrink it down to your commute goes even faster, too. Quick little tip. You can hit, the playback speed and to go to 1.5 or 2 and this will fly right by.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you then when we hit the buzzword that you really want, you can slow it down to find out the real details. Well, thank you again. And for the listeners, thank you for listening. We do this because Franklin matters.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.